Next case is United States v. Riesbeck. Is the appellant prepared to argue? The government? Appellant may argue.
Chief Judge Slipke, judges of the court, may it please the court. I am John M. Smith, and along with Lieutenant Philip Jones, we represent BM2 John Riesbeck. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
Granted.
Thank you. For the court to affirm this case, it would need to explain away 45 years of its precedent and 66 years of the support for the proposition that a convening authority must personally consider Article 25D and personally select the best qualified individuals. From the United States versus Kemp through Daigle, Marsh, Lewis, Benedict, Doughty, and Barty, this court has decided member consideration and selection cases with the benefit of one constant: the testimony of the convening authority or direct testimony about the convening authority's actions that establishes that the convening authority personally selected, considered Article 25D, the required criteria, and based on that consideration, selected the best qualified members to serve. In the present case, Admiral Paul Zukum, the current commandant of the Coast Guard, a current convening authority, and the convening authority in this case, did not know the congressionally mandated standards of Article 25 by his own admission. He did not employ the Article 25 criteria by his own admission. He could not employ the standard even had he wanted to, because he was provided with inadequate information concerning the criteria in Article 25. And his failure to carry out his duties as the convening authority resulted in not only improper panel selection, but prejudiced BM2 Riesbeck, denying him the most basic protection that Congress used to substitute for the Sixth Amendment. That is a convening authority's consideration that he would choose, using the criteria, members who were best qualified to hear the evidence, listen to the judge's instructions, and provide a fair and impartial trial.
Okay, counsel, before we plunge into this, why isn't this whole thing waived? Counsel gets up at trial and says, all I want is this one female off this panel. Give me the female, I'll go away. Judge says, nah. But he said, you know, I'm not interested in the composition of the panel. I'm not interested, you know, we're not talking about silence here. We're not talking about forfeiture. We're talking about what seems to be explicit, express waiver. I'm not interested in the composition of the panel, Your Honor. So why isn't it waived?
It's not waived, Your Honor, because, quite frankly, you cannot waive the statutory duty that the convening authority has. It is, in essence,
what's the support for that proposition? Why can't you waive it?
Well, Your Honor, it's jurisdictional in nature. And looking at, for example, Article 25, we know that the court has to be constituted with personal selection. The fact that the trial defense counsel did not, or did not bring that up at the time. This court recognized when it sent this case back down the first time.
Didn't we, in fact, say that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Didn't we, in fact, say that the issue was not waived?
Yes, you did.
We said that, as I remember, we said that you can't waive UCI. But we're not arguing UCI here. They seem to be arguing if we slosh between the two issues, apparent UCI, appearances. But if you're talking about stacking the thing, you're talking actual UCI, you're talking nothing.
But, Your Honor, we're not talking about stacking the panel.
Well, that, it seems to me, is what our observation about waiver went to. If we're not talking about it, then it seems to me it can be waived.
I don't believe that's so, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the reason that I don't believe that's so is because when we go back and we look at the fundamental requirements for the constitution of a courts martial, personal jurisdiction, jurisdiction over the offense, the court martial is a unique and individual entity. And where the convening authority does not exercise what is the basic protection for BM2 RESPAC, this court martial should be sent back, remanded.
Counsel, we had three convening authorities or individuals acting as convening authorities, which I think has led to some of the confusion for me. And both of the first two convening authorities appointed members. Is it your position that when the third and final convening authority amended the court martial order, he had to be rebriefed on all of the members that were already appointed to the panel?
First of all, I would say yes, Your Honor, but if I could just correct your recollection.
Yeah.
There are two convening authorities here, according to the government. The convening authorities that exist are Admiral Brown, the initial convening authority, and then Admiral Zukunft. The two in the middle, Admiral Colvin and Admiral Ryan were, as the government has postured, subordinates. So we have more than just two out of the four convening authorities taking your position. In fact, we've got the original, and then when the case went to court, we have Admiral Zukunft. And it's our position that Admiral Zukunft had to personally select and consider Article 25, the criteria for the entire panel.
For all of them.
And for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that he, in his position, appointed those members to the court, ultimately. So,
Mr. Smith,
the court has a unique...
Mr. Smith.
I'm sorry.
You've indicated that you're not relying on a stacking the court theory, right?
Well, I'm not relying on that as the initial. I think that the court is stacked due to the negligence of the convening authority. Had he properly had the information and chosen the members who sat on that courts martial, he would have known initially that there were six victim advocates and you ended up with four victim advocates after challenges.
What I'm trying to get at is, you started your presentation off with what Admiral Zucum, am I pronouncing that right?
I think so, Your Honor.
What he did or did not know and admitted to not knowing. Now, are you, is your position is that that is a statutory violation of Article 25, period?
It's a statutory violation, but under the circumstances of this case, it is a statutory violation of the constitutional protection. Congress substituted Article 25E for the Sixth Amendment right to a fair and impartial jury. This court has written that, Benedict as others.
All right, well, if that's, let's assume for the sake of the argument that you are correct, then can you talk to me a little bit about your prejudice analysis? If, in fact, there has been this violation of Article 25, then you get to prejudice how? What do you accumulate as far as the circumstances in the case that you allege the accused was prejudiced?
And again, Judge Sparks, for the argument, I would start off by saying we don't need to show prejudice. However, for the argument.
No, I understand that. No, I understand that. The burden is not yours.
Yeah.
But I'm asking from your perspective.
From my perspective, the prejudice is the fact that you had a panel that was not chosen to bring the best qualified members to sit on a court-martial and be fair and impartial, and that evidence includes the fact that there are four victim advocates sitting on this panel. So when you look at the appearance of fairness in the military justice system, you have a majority of the panel having this specialized training in a sexual assault case itself.
And the reason why I ask is because I noticed you did not really focus on the gender makeup of the panel. In other words, as I recall, initially the Admiral Brown's selection of the panel contained six of the ten officers on the panel were women.
Right.
When that, the makeup of the command, you know, the makeup of the number of women in the command was dramatically different than that.
Your Honor, I'd love to be able to say that that was in Admiral Zucum's head, but the way that these members were chosen, the way that this court-martial process went forward, the process and Admiral Zucum were negligent. They had absolutely, Admiral Zucum, I'm sorry, had no idea who he was choosing and why. He was presented two lists of officers.
You're not suggesting, counsel, that if his subordinates had intentionally selected victim assistants and women to sit on the panel, that the fact that he blessed it without knowing that would...
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that he caused that. He caused that appearance of partiality through his negligence. And we have the system so that there is not that appearance.
But we do have that system, and that is voir dire, and that is challenges for cause. And certainly the defense counsel knew that these individuals were somewhere involved, either as victim advocates or involved in victims counseling, and could have made challenges for cause and chose not to, which indicates they were acceptable.
No, I don't think it indicates that, but we forget an important step here, Your Honor, and that is challenges for cause are one part of the large process. Before that, BM2 Respect has been told by Congress that he gets a fair and impartial jury selected by the...
He doesn't get a fair and impartial jury. He gets a panel of members selected in accordance with law.
You're right, Your Honor, and I certainly apologize for that. But he gets a fair and impartial panel. That's what he gets. And that didn't happen here, and it couldn't happen here because the convening authority said the selection of the members is not best qualified.
You're just about out of time. I just want to ask you, what is, do you believe, your better argument? Is it the failure to follow Article 25, or is it the fact that there was implied bias just because of the number of victims' advocates? Your issue is one or two.
Okay. Here's the way that BM2 Riesbeck sees the argument. He's denied of the right because the convening authority does not know the standard, can't execute the standard because he doesn't have enough information. That brings forth the appearance of unresolved appearance of unfairness by having initially six victim advocates ending up with four majority of the panel.
So they're connected. The result is because of the first error.
Absolutely connected.
Okay.
Your time has expired.
I'm sorry?
Your time has expired.
Well, I have 51.
No, you're 54 over.
The clock was moving the wrong way.
I mean, do you have something you wish to say?
I can pick it up by my 5 minutes of
okay.
Thank you.
Fair enough. The government?
Good morning, Chief Judge and Judges of the Court. My name is Lieutenant Commander Teresa Olde, and along with Mr. Stephen McCleary, we represent the United States. The appellant here was tried by a fair panel that was properly selected by the convening authority, and there is no unresolved appearance of unfairness that would warrant relief.
All right, well, let's dive right in. Admiral Zukunft and his, presently the commandant, but at that time the commander out there and the convening authority, says in his stipulation that best qualified, he doesn't know anything about best qualified, that he's interested in diversity, and basically confesses complete ignorance, implying, very strongly implying either the wrong standard or no standard, with respect to the statutory qualifications for the selection of court members. He said, this is not a best qualified process. Admiral, it's in the statute. So where does that leave us? Isn't that pretty blatant?
To answer your question, Your Honor, I can first talk about why this isn't a jurisdictional issue and then address why each of the comments doesn't indicate a statutory error under Article 25. First, this court has said in Ryan back in 1978, what we know it's not allowed is a person who is not the convening authority signing the convening order.
I'm having trouble hearing you or understanding you.
In Ryan, this court said the proper convening authority has to sign the convening order. In Kemp and the following cases, this court said the convening authority is allowed to have help. In Marsh, this court drew the hard line, saying that help cannot be presented in a way that the convening authority has no alternative. And in this case, Admiral Zukunft had a choice, and that's what gives us choice.
But you're not going to bless the process that was used, right? You're not certainly not going to stand up here and suggest that this is the best way for a convening authority to choose members for a panel, which is decrying any knowledge of the actual standards that are supposed to exist.
No, Your Honor, this is not a best practice, but it is enough for this court to affirm.
Stick to the statute. You know, we don't go romping off into constitutionality if we can decide this on statutory grounds. Stick to the statute. How on earth does this comply with the statute?
Let me address first Admiral Zukunft's statements. First, he said this is not a best qualified process. He's saying these things in his stipulation 3 years after he acted in the case, but further in his stipulation he indicates that he is looking for people that are best suited to making an objective assessment, and that's at Joint Appendix 526. So he is getting to who he is.
But he is saying that in the context of choosing females to sit on the panel. Why doesn't that exacerbate the problem the government has? As the Chief Judge has noted, it doesn't matter whether it was 3 years or 5 years or 10 years later. This is his testimony. He is saying, essentially, I didn't apply Article 25. Instead, he's saying, I applied a diversity standard, which is not part of 25. And then he says that he wants diversity because it will affect the deliberations and decision of the panel. Why isn't that really damning to the government when he's saying, I am using an improper standard for the purpose of affecting the decisions in the court-martial?
Your Honor, the reason why Admiral Zukov said he looked for diversity was to provide a more objective assessment, which is properly interpreted as fair and impartial members who can appropriately assess what's put forth objectively. In Dowdy, this court said that it will be deferential to good faith attempts to be inclusive and require representativeness. And that's exactly what's happened.
Representativeness 6 of 8 in a command that does not have that percentage of females in the command overall by any stretch of the imagination? I mean, that's not representative, is it?
Your Honor, this court has never defined whether representative means that the panel that sits has to reflect the local demographic.
But you and the convening authority are raising the representative issue.
You raised it. I didn't.
Yeah, right.
Yes, Your Honor. The convening authority's comments about diversity don't automatically indicate that there is a problem in application of Article 25 in looking for diversity.
Well, he says explicitly that it's not a best qualified process. The statute says thou shalt select those best qualified by virtue of, and then it lists several criteria. How more blatant can you get? Let's not go down the rabbit hole of diversity when you've got this thing sitting staring you in the face. How can the government get around that?
He said that it was not a best qualified process 3 years later.
That's another thing. Amazingly, in 3 years, during which time he rose the highest position in the Coast Guard, no one ever disabused him of this notion, which I find curious. But anyway, go ahead.
While he didn't recite the statutory criteria, the government certainly concedes that he didn't cite it correctly in his statement. He does.
It's more than recite it, it's comply with it. He didn't just say, I got the wrong criteria. He said, it's not a BQ process. So where does that leave us?
He did say that, Your Honor.
Yeah.
So how would this court craft an opinion where we would bless that statement by this convening authority without stating we as a court are ignoring Article 25 going forward? How would we draw that fine distinction if we have a convening authority saying, I'm not using best qualified process here? How would we say to anybody in the future, you need to comply with Article 25?
This court hasn't made an opinion that addresses how exactly does a convening authority need to document their compliance with Article 25, and what do they need to look at in order to do so. Statutory errors have generally fallen into problems of panel stacking, problems of improper exclusion, problems of using an improper variable, such as volunteers. So where does that fit into that category? Are we saying that the convening authority simply didn't use certain criteria that he didn't address or document?
He said he didn't use the criteria in the statute. He used a standard, stated a standard that isn't in the statute, and ignored the things that were in the statute. I mean, he misunderstood what he was required to do when he signed off on that convening order, right? I mean, do you understand the problem?
Yes, Your Honor. His statements.
You have an argument as to why there was or was not any prejudice to the accused in this case, assuming, I'm not asking you to concede that there was a problem, but assuming that we believe that there's a problem.
Yes, Your Honor. This court would apply the standard of articulated in Ward. Was there here a fair trial and the appearance of a fair trial? And the answer to both of those questions is yes. As to a fair trial, the case.
Now, before you get into that, do you agree that the burden is on the government to prove lack of prejudice?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what would the standard be? Would it be harmless beyond a reasonable doubt or just harmlessness?
It would not. It would be harmlessness, Your Honor. The error that is most likely to, most similar to this one, again, not conceding, an error would be doubt, where everyone is making good faith efforts to comply, but something irrelevant makes its way in. So in that case, it was just Article 59A prejudice.
Now, why couldn't the argument be made that the Admiral, when appointing these individuals and saying in his stipulated testimony that he was putting on additional females because he felt it would affect the decisions in the case, why could that not be perceived as unlawful command influence requiring a HBRD standard?
There are several things. First of all, the convening authority never said that he was putting women on a sexual assault case for a specific purpose. He actually disclaimed the belief that he thought, he was asked the question, do you believe that women are better qualified as members on sex assault panels? And he said no.
But
was this panel just for this case? Was this panel created for this case?
Yes, Your Honor. By the time Admiral Zukov is asked to appoint additional members, it is Riesbeck. Riesbeck is already referred to this case.
But the Admiral went on to say in that same sentence, when asked, do you believe women are better qualified? He says no, but I do believe that diversity, in other words, my adding on additional females onto the panel, provides a more objective assessment. Now, that is a benign way of looking at that. A different way of looking at that is he is saying, I will achieve a different result in this court-martial based on me in a sexual assault case imposing a disproportionate number of females onto the panel. So why is that not unlawful command influence?
The appellant hasn't raised unlawful command influence in panel stacking as to women for several reasons. First of all, we have this list of people that gets to Admiral Zukov was identified or selected in the case of Admiral Brown by persons that had a digest that told them this is the best qualified process. Here is the Article 25.
But the military judge in his findings said that even they were, to use his phrase, consciously or unconsciously guided by the principle of diversity. So that pool was skewed even below the Admiral.
Your Honor, this court should reject that finding of fact as clearly erroneous for the following reasons. First of all, the Dubé judge used a number of things that were not specifically stated and were not in the record of trial to say this is a climate of attention to sexual assault, and he actually said, as seen by a multitude of public documents and websites, and he didn't cite to any of them, they're not in the record. In this case, the SJ testified that he didn't have conversations with any of these four officers about a preference for women in sexual assault cases or any cases. In fact, each of the four officers that were looking at these numbers made statements, and aside from the point that you bring up, Your Honor, which the government disagrees with that interpretation, no one said, we are putting women on this panel to get a conviction or a harsh sentence.
Well, can I move just to the panel? Okay, so irrespective of whether they intended to do it or not, at the end of the day, would you agree with the statement that six of the eight people that were on, who were detailed to the court-martial, were women?
Yes, Your Honor.
And it's true that five of those eight women had served as VAs?
Yes, Your Honor. They either had training or they had some experience.
And so that's a majority?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Do you agree that if the military judge had granted the motion to strike Lieutenant Commander Kao for implied bias, that he would then have been able to exercise his peremptory challenge against another one of those women?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that would have brought the majority, that would have broken the majority of VAs on the panel, wouldn't it have?
Yes, Your Honor, that would have occurred.
And that would have probably looked better to the general member of the public in a sexual assault case?
May I address just the general standard of appearance of fairness,
sure.
Your Honor, to answer that question?
But as long as you answer my question at the end of the day.
Yes, Your Honor, the question is whether this constitutes a fair trial based on, here's the panel composition could have been different. The standard in Kirkland that was approved by this court and board is there an unresolved appearance of unfairness? But this court should instead look at some of the more recent case law in a UCI context and in Boyce and in Peters and in an implied bias context, where you define more clearly what does it mean to have a fair trial, and that's an objective, disinterested observer, fully informed of all the facts and circumstances, would harbor a significant doubt as to the fairness.
But that observer would be fully aware of all the shenanigans that resulted in this convening order, right? And the convening authority and what he said.
They would be, Your Honor, but they would also be fully aware.
Why would that make them feel better about the case as opposed to worse?
Your Honor, they would also be fully aware of other things that indicated a fair trial. And the first is that everyone here acted in trying to comply with Article 25 in good faith. The SJA made sure that the rosters that were provided were designed to reflect Article 25 criteria. In the first three digests, he correctly listed out Article 25 criteria and that this was a best qualified process. The members were actually qualified. If this court will look at the member questionnaires, he's...
But, counsel, in terms of building on Judge Ryan's question, when we're focusing on Lieutenant Commander K.O., when the challenge was made, the military judge didn't go through the liberal grant mandate analysis, was rather dismissive of the defense concerns there, didn't permit additional questioning, reworded on his own the answers provided by Lieutenant Commander K.O. Why wouldn't that give an objective observer pause about the fairness of how this member selection was going?
I have two comments to answer that, Your Honor. The first is that the court should separate this implied bias challenge from any Article 25 problems in its analysis. First, this court shouldn't look at KO as this is just the implied bias challenge because that was waived under RCM 912F4. Under whether there's a problem with Article 25, in Gooch, this court separated and said, okay, we have the Article 25 process, which is for selecting members, and then we have the process of voir dire, which is to ensure that any bias is exposed. So two separate processes here. And to the facts that show fairness, the things that happened in voir dire and the things that were brought out also would help a fully informed member of the public find that there was a fair trial. And those things include these victim advocates, none of these were a person that was sitting in the SARC office or a career victim advocate. Each of the four that sat had experience that was just a class that they had taken, ranging from the longest was 1 week to the shortest being 1 day of a larger class about stress management in critical incidents. One had never actually served. Two had only counseled one person, one of which wasn't sure if it was a sexual assault case or just a misconduct incident by the person they assisted. And one had counseled about 12 people, but that was over 10 or 15 years.
What percentage of the people on the digest sent to the various officers, what percentage of those people on the rosters were female?
Your Honor, the military judge found that for the officers it was about 20%, and for the enlisted it was about 13%.
It was about what for 13%. The enlisted? 15?
13, Your Honor.
13.
And were 70% of the panel members female?
Yes, Your Honor.
You don't think that a prudent military judge faced with that rather unusual composition and asked to remove someone for implied bias wouldn't have been better served to have done so? I mean, I understand that it's an abuse of discretion standard, but how do you basically support that decision?
Your Honor, in U.S. v. Peters,
I mean, understand, if this was a standing convening order, right, in a service that has tons of court martials every year, and this convening order just happened to be the one that Riesbeck was detailed to, it would be one thing, right? But it was created, this panel was created in a sexual assault case for this appellant. And whether the motives were benign or not is irrelevant to how it looks.
Your Honor, for your first question, the military judge properly considered only the impact of KO. Was there something wrong with KO that made her unfair? And he properly found it not an abuse of discretion that when you're just focusing on KO, which this court said in Peters, it's about that particular member, there is nothing wrong with that. KO had been a victim advocate 23 years prior. She didn't remember much about the incident, and although...
But she hadn't listed the incident on her initial questionnaire, had she?
She stated that she had that experience during group guard year, Your Honor. It was not on the questionnaire. Only one member had listed the certification on their questionnaire. Member that sought, Your Honor. And then the second issue with the apparent UCI type argument is there are not a lot of facts here that show intentional action. And in Hilo and Smith, the court has required someone stating more than what Admiral Zinkoff stated or more than just the general climate or environment, but instead stating, like in Smith, we like women on sexual assault panels. We do like them. We want to put these women on the panel because they are hardcore. Or in Hilo, we really want these people on the panel because they're supporters of hard discipline and commanders. There's nothing like that here.
I'm talking about an appearance of fairness and impartiality. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not speaking for the other people sitting here. I'm asking about the appearance question.
Your Honor, in order to say that this is an appearance of unfairness, in other words, apparent unlawful command influence, the appellant would still have to show a fact, which, if true, constitutes UCI. And if we just look to appearance of the panel as a whole, there are two problems that could arise. First,
I'm talking about the denial of the challenge, right? You think that has to do with UCI?
No, Your Honor. This challenge was properly denied because the court is just looking at the impact of KO on the panel. Implied bias challenges, any challenges are not a methodology for addressing panel composition under this court's precedent. Panel composition as a whole should stay in Article 25 problems. When we're looking at KO, it's just whether a member of the public would see her presence on the panel as unfair, as causing the trial to become unfair.
That we can't look at her presence on the panel in light of the rest of the panel as having anything to do with that?
Your Honor, that would not be in keeping with U.S. v. Peters, where this court said that it's the presence of the members that acts on the overall appearance of fairness. The appellant had a chance to challenge the other victim advocates and had a chance to question the women and chose not to challenge people. The members that actually sat on this court were people that the appellant did not challenge.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The appellant may argue in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. To follow up with Judge Ryan's discussion with the government, the prejudice here, one is to look at the totality of the circumstances. And so the fact that the individual use of the peremptory challenge against Lieutenant Commander K.O. can still be used by this court to analyze, under the totality of the circumstances, what's the appearance to the public and an observer. I would like to move, however, to the process itself. This court has sat not just for UCI as the champion of the structural integrity of the military justice system. It's more than that. Here, I think we have something worse. Not much worse than UCI, but neglect of the justice system can cause the same downfall that UCI does. When you look at 37 pages of roster with a quarter inch that does not show an individual's experience, training, judicial temperament, or education other than a cursory look, you stand, and in this case, the Coast Guard stands the structural integrity of the military justice system on its head.
What was the prejudice from the process?
The prejudice from the process is not only did we have four victim advocates who eventually sat, But more than that, we had the failure of the convening authority, the senior officer in the command, to give BM2 respec what he was due. Best qualified members based on the statutory criteria.
If it's prejudice per se, it's just...
I do, Your Honor. Think about judicial temperament. The tripod of judicial temperament is experience. It's your past assignments. It's the medals that you wear on your chest. It's the education and the training that you get. The Coast Guard, in this process, threw that all out. This court in Jenkins talked about the structural integrity of the military justice system, and that the Coast Guard, as well as the other services, courts of criminal appeals, they're the ones who are supposed to shape that structural integrity, ultimately for you to look at.
Mr. Smith, it's not clear to me from the record when the different people who were making these member selections were provided questionnaires. In other words...
They were not, Your Honor.
So the selectors would not have known whether
they
these...
had no idea.
These individuals were victim advocates or anything like that.
You're right, Your Honor. And to me, that is part of the negligence. You cannot make a best qualified determination with the kind of information that the Coast Guard gave.
Can't the selector, before you run out of time here, can't the selector rely on his or her own professional experience in looking at individuals at a certain rank and where they are in their careers and what their jobs might have been, and making a determination on their qualifications?
If that were the standard, Your Honor, then Congress would have cut out experience, judicial temperament, education, training.
The original roster, I thought, had name, rank, gender, age, education level, time and service, current unit and build description.
That's clearly not enough.
Well, how much does he have to know?
How much is enough? Look at Dowdy. In Dowdy, you said that where the staff judge advocate did not give the correct evidence, correct standard to his convening authority, that convening authority's testimony that he looked at questionnaires and 10 years of experience, significant postings, awards, decorations, training, that is what's sufficient. That's what makes the best qualified standard.
Smith, Mr. Smith, can I?
Yes,
I have one more question.
Go ahead.
And I know your time has run, but I wanted to go back to this issue about your claim that this is a per se prejudicial issue or circumstance.
Correct.
And I thought in Bartlett we kind of set out several categories of kinds of violations of Article 25. And what the standards were and who had the burdens on those?
You did, Your Honor.
I don't recall any of them suggesting that is a per se.
My point is that where the initial selection is faulty, it is bad, if not worse, than UCI. But look at the Bartlett factors. Was there an improper motive by the convening authority? Not that I see. There's a gross negligence.
Well, I'm actually not talking about
the
factors.
Was he authorized to convene? He was. Were the members personally selected by the convening authority? That's one of the Bartlett standards.
No, I understand that. But I think in Bartlett we still have these categories that, you know, I think one of them was there's an administrative mistake. One, the other one is if there were people intentionally included or excluded. And then the other category of kind of error was whether this is actually unlawful command influence.
But
where are you putting your...
But there's more than that, because when Bartlett discussed this, It also talked about, was the panel well-balanced? Did the members meet the Article 25 criteria? Those are some of the factors that they looked at.
Right, but I think what Judge Sparks is asking you is based on the categories that we set forth, where are you placing your case? Or are you saying it's a sui generis new case?
I would, first of all, I'd say that it was new, but if you look at the third prong, in that case, in the appellant's estimation, the negligence, some would say gross negligence, of the process lead you to that third prong. It's not all about UCI.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Judge.
Thank you. Thank you. Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted, and the court will stand in recess pending further order of the court.
All rise. Court is adjourned until further order of the court.